Analysts and economists have largely welcomed the 2020 budget, consumers being offered some tax relief and expenditure being cut by reining in a public sector wage bill that's been spiraling out of control. Just two of the right notes that were struck on Wednesday. But was it necessarily a Moody's budget? Was enough done to convince the ratings agency not to cut the country's sovereign rating to junk status come March? On that, the verdict is still out, and Jones Gondo of Nedbank CIB joins us now with his take. Thanks so much, Jones, for joining us this evening. So we had Moody's late last night out with a statement recognizing that South Africa's fiscal strategy is taking shape in 2020, but also highlighting quite a few concerns. Right at the top, and very broadly speaking, what was your reading of that release? Has South Africa managed to buy itself more time?
Thank you for having me. So my reading of that release is that I think Moody's is fairly comfortable with the fact that National Treasury has managed to actually put a plan together in mitigation of runaway debt. And I think that was the major criticism after the MTBPS. But they actually did not give too much away in terms of whether they felt it was going to be at risk for their next review. They steered clear of giving much guidance in any one direction. But we can tell just by the numbers and just the direction of where our debt is going, that it is a credit negative direction since MTBPS. So we don't think they would change anything like an outlook in terms of indicating direction of where the credit is going.
Yeah. Jones, let's take a look at some of the concerns here. I mean, we're cutting the state wage bill is, of course, a step in the right direction. This is by no means a given, with negotiations with unions still expected to kick off. So the quantum that was tabled really being brought to question at this stage. Do you see the state holding its ground here? Because all it's speaking to right now is a wage increase that was supposed to have been implemented in year three, now not coming to the fore, right?
That's correct. And I think it was an ambitious target, 160 billion worth of expenditure cuts. Whether it was the wage bill or anywhere else would have been really difficult to implement. And I think at this stage, it really is in the realm of the political negotiation process. We really have to trust in our institutional process in terms of bargaining council, and that the voice of reason about, you know, where our fiscal sustainability needs to land. I think the president's been pushing consensus, trying to seek consensus with all parties. And I think the misgivings is that our track record of doing exactly that, even to get to the wage bill where it is now, was, I would say, probably a hard negotiation that didn't work in the favor of government at the time.
Not only in that realm, but as far as our state-owned enterprises are concerned as well, we have contingent liabilities from SOE still a possibility. So how much more does this elevate risks in these budget forecasts?
So for Moody's, therefore, since last year, they've been incorporating the contingent liabilities into the debt stock. So what is the, I guess, the critical metric to watch is the pace at which debt is climbing. I would imagine that going forward for National Treasury, the big concern is that even with the expenditure cuts, they still have not been able to stabilize debt, the growth of debt going forward. And so I think that is the critical concern, because at some point you have to put a marker to say that it stabilizes at some point. And I think they've kicked that out to 2027, 2028. Towards the higher end of 70, almost 80% debt to GDP.
Yeah. As you say, in jeopardy is the country's fiscal performance, a deficit at anything between 6 and 7% over the next few years, the possibility of a substantial increase in government's debt burden, key factors to consider here. And despite that, we've had National Treasury avoid introducing any broad tax increase measures given the weak growth environment, of course, cognizant of the fact that they don't want to strangle economic growth any further. But could this move, in fact, come back to bite down the line?
No, because I think critical of reforms is that the thing that is in government's control to some extent is being able to cut things like a fiscal budget, cut red tape for businesses, even to the extent of stimulating by cutting taxes. And these things are precursors to be able to stimulate investment and investment-led growth. So I would imagine that it's been pent up for a long time for all stakeholders to actually see some prudence and fiscal prudence, because the debt is being used primarily to refinance existing debt and also for consumptive purposes, not investment purposes. And I think that balance is what would run away and come back to bite us if we don't address it now.
Jones, with all of this being said, can we actually afford to be having conversations around the creation of a sovereign wealth fund? And if so, is there any credit benefit to a sovereign wealth fund?
So I think a sovereign wealth fund is something that has been in sort of the political ideas realms of the ANC. And I think it was something that came in quite prominently in the elective policy and elective conferences of the ANC. So it's not surprising to see that there's a political move to have it. But from a credit point of view, it's still very small. I mean, if you think of the capitalization that they're targeting of $30 billion, it's almost only 1% of total debt. And a credit benefit, at least at Moody's, in terms of their criteria, is only when it's 10% and above does it actually create any sort of credit benefit to the sovereign's debt profile or savings profile.
Okay, well, let's leave it there, Jones. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. Jones Gondor is with Nedbank CIB.